Welcome to the Optimal You podcast. This is pharmacist Steve Ersfeld. Grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and enjoy the show.
Welcome to episode 35 of the Ersfeld Pharmacy Optimal You podcast. I'm your host, pharmacist Steve Ersfeld. The goal of the podcast is to discuss different health topics that might be helpful to you in your journey to becoming the optimal you. If you listen all the way to the end of the podcast, I have a special offer for you as a gift for taking the time. Today's guest is KBMO Diagnostics CEO, James White. But before we start our visit with James, I need to let the listeners know that this podcast provides general information and a discussion about health and health-related subjects. The information provided in this podcast is not intended and should not be construed as medical advice, nor is the information a substitute for professional medical expertise or treatment. So just a little background on our guest. James is the CEO and owner of KBMO Diagnostics and has over 25 years of diagnostic and pharmaceutical experience working globally, launching a range of innovative products to help with cardiovascular disease, ranging from multiplex molecular diagnostic instruments. Man, that is deep.
I know.
And assays through the point of care blood gas solutions. So James acquired the developer of the patented FIT test, which is food inflammation test, which is the first assay to identify IgG1-4 and C3d, which we'll talk about in a little bit here, the inflammatory markers of inflammation by personalizing a patient's diet to promise to reduce symptoms of cardiovascular, diabetes, IBS, and other autoimmune diseases as well. So they have a host of tests that we'll talk about, but why don't we start the discussion? You fill in any of the blanks and maybe tell us a little bit about KBMO.
Perfect. So Steve very kindly told me that he's a second generation pharmacist and he's been going for 42 years. So that's impressive in its own right.
I need to clarify that. I haven't been going 42 years. I was a senior, in high school when my dad started the pharmacy. So the pharmacy's been existing for 42 years.
Steve, that was a very good. Well, I thought you know, the air was so good where you guys are that you know, you guys live forever. So it's right. Us kind of poor souls on the coast that are suffering. And it's, you know, the secret to longevity is going to your pharmacy.
It is definitely for sure. Yeah.
Good stuff. So anyway, 42 years, not Steve on his own, apparently. Apparently he's second generation, so that's good.
Yep.
I still like the concept that he's been doing it, and he's actually now his East Coast age is about 82, but his North Dakota age is about 42, so it's good. So KBMO stands for, we're not yet 42 years, but is K for Catherine, my wife, B for Ben, my son, M for Max, my other son, and we saved the best to last, Olivia, my daughter. So we've only been going for 14 years. And as you can see with my kind of bags under my eyes, that was all me. So yeah. Unlike Steve kind of denying his 42 years young. So that's KBMO Diagnostics. I wanted to at least get that out there to say that, you know, you've got two family run businesses. And I always think that that means you've got two people who care passionately about what they do. And so I think that's important to bring that out in terms of given some of the options we all have out there, which are multi-billion, multi, whatever they are. But generally, they won't pick up the phone and they won't give you a call back. So
right.
For better or worse, you'll definitely hear from Steve or James.
Yep, for sure. Definitely. So tell us a little bit about the tests that you do. So obviously you're a diagnostic company, you're into testing, and we offer a variety of tests, several of your tests. I've actually done one of the tests at the Great Lakes Conference, which your person manning the booth talked me into it, and I was like, I don't have a leaky gut, I'm good, I don't need to take that test.
That's great to know. Shout out to Alexis, who's kind of my right hand lady, who kind of does a lot of stuff for me, and she was the person you're referring to. So that's great that she's now kind of corralling people into the booth and pricking their fingers, which is great, which is again one of those tricks we learned a while ago, because we used to give when we did all these conferences with great providers and the likes of great companies like Neutrodyne, another good family company there as well, that what we found is that we'd give providers a kit and we'd be all excited, and then 6 months later they'd come back and go, oh, I've still got that kit. And what you'll find with every provider, you all think that they're all providers, but actually what they all is, they're all people who own a shelf which is full of kits that they've taken from conferences that they've never run. And so that's, for me, that's really the definition of a provider. It's the guy who's got that shelf with all these kits he never ran at a conference. So the way we got around that was to have people like Alexis be at the trade shows and actually take the sample then. And then it kind of changed the kind of paradigm a bit, because rather than me kind of bothering Steve with another email that he probably hasn't got time to read, he's going, James, you need to get back to me because I did this test and I need to know what my test results are. So it's been a good way of kind of slightly changing the dynamic when we go to conferences. A, we're hopefully giving some good habits to all our very worthy providers out there. But more importantly, we're getting some test results. And so what we always find is the good ones like Steve, they want to test themselves before they unleash these new tests on you, the audience. So again, it's always been helpful to kind of do that. And we've found that that's been a really effective way of us getting the message out. And I can't believe it, but occasionally we find the odd provider who may not be, you know, the shining light of excellence when it comes to health. So it's been good. And with the leaky gut test, you never know. So it's one of those things where I think some tests, you know, cardiovascular, we may touch on that later on. It's generally lifestyle and health. And most of our providers are pretty healthy, and Steve's very healthy. So, but sometimes leaky gut, it's more of a hidden one. And so that's one that we found has been really illustrative in terms of what we get back and some of the feedback we hear from providers.
Yeah, I was really impressed that with the leaky gut test, because, you know, prior to this, I think we had one other company. It seemed like it was a harder test. This thing's so easy. It's a take-home test. Patient goes home, pricks her finger, bunch of spots of blood on a sheet of paper, sends it off. And then they get the results. They send them to us. We go over them and help with the plan that you kind of send along with, which is great.
Yeah.
So how did you get going on that as far as the fit test and the leaky gut? I really like the add-on to the fit.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been it's been a bit of a kind of a slightly winding road versus straight from obviously cradle into the pharmacy when you started yours at 40, you know, for 42 years ago. But you know what we found is that I was doing all those different kind of technologies that you described. We did blood gas analysis. We sold that to a veterinary company, and then I did some cardiovascular testing, and was kind of getting to the point that it was a little bit disappointing that really all these cardiologists were telling these patients, look, what you need to do is exercise more and eat less. And I thought there's got to be a bit more of a kind of direct way and, you know, individualized care way of coming up with this. This seems a little bit blah after all their training that's all they're coming out with. And I'm sure it's very much more nuanced than that, but I'm giving you the kind of the cliff notes, the kind of edited highlights of generally what most cardiologists will tell you. So when I came across this company that was looking at that point, 132 foods, colorings, and additives, we were like, huh, that's interesting. So this is basically for each patient telling them which foods are actually causing them an inflammatory response. And inflammation is the root cause of pretty much everything in terms of, so the idea was, how do we take this and actually then get out and talk to as many clients and patients as we can about, frankly, some pretty revolutionary information. And so the guy that I'd partnered with was a guy called Dr. Brent Dorval, and he discovered this test. He created it. And he was a really brilliant, brilliant scientist, remains a brilliant scientist. His first claim to fame was he invented the first rapid HIV diagnostic. So what I loved about this test was, you know, it had that really good high quality around it, i.e. we looked at everything through an infectious disease lens to make sure it was highly accurate, highly reproducible, which are all kind of good medical terms, but more importantly, means it worked. And so at the point in time, he was a great scientist, but not such a great sales and marketeer. So he had three doctors running the test. And so I went and visited each one of them. And they were all unbelievably positive about the clinical outcomes they'd had with this test. And so I went back to Brent, and we kind of came up with an arrangement where I ended up buying him out, let him do what he loved to do, which was the science, and develop some of the new tests, and then leave me to do what I maybe am more average at, but kind of doing, which is talking and trying to translate what he does, which is taking the really complex science and make it that busy providers can understand it. And more importantly, they can then equally explain that to their patients or listeners as we are today. So that's what really excited me about this test, was that we were looking at, rather than, you know, one size fits all, which even as I say it now makes me slightly nauseous, the reality is that just never works. So what we wanted to do is come up with a test that would give you as an individual a way of personalizing your care. And I think if a pandemic's taught us all one thing and one thing only, we all have to take care of ourselves. And it's not about, you know, hoping that, you know, my healthcare provider, my insurance company, my state, my government will do the right thing. We may all be waiting a long time for that, so let's not worry about that. Let's focus on what we can do as individuals. And I think the great thing with this test, it gives you easy, actionable results. And more importantly, they're not judgmental, on the basis we're all fed up of going to see a provider who goes, "Oh, James, you're overweight again. Your triglycerides through the roof. Boo hoo hoo." You know, and we all know that before we have that medical, by the way. But the reality is, we're slightly resistant to change as human beings. So the great thing with this test result, we're looking at items of food. We all understand what those items of food are. So it gives us a way of kind of almost entering into this world of trying to make ourselves healthier, but on a level flat playing field, rather than going, "Well, you know, I didn't study PhD biology kind of growing up, so I don't really understand what some of these markers are, let alone what 23 or whatever the number is that sits alongside it." So what we found is we took some really brilliant science from a brilliant scientist and try to convert it into a test result that was easy to understand. It's only 3 pages long. And as Steve mentioned, when he did it a year ago, it's really accessible. And I think that's the key here. We're trying to keep stuff simple. In this world of AI and stuff, we pride ourselves that we laminate things and send that out to our providers, because we want the provider to understand it. And we want you, the patient, to understand it. So again, it's all about simplicity, but based off a really very, very smart and detailed science. We don't need to kind of convince you of that. What we want to make sure is we give you results which are actionable and you can be compliant with. Because again, if we're not compliant, then we're all wasting our time. And so as an organization, maybe because I'm pretty simple as well, we're trying to make sure we keep everything simple that our busy providers and busy patients can understand it. And so that was really the thing that excited me about this test. It gave us a way of getting into providers with a really good test, but would be something that is non-judgmental and something that we were hoping patients would be able to adapt. And here we are 14 years later, as I always say, an overnight 14-year success. You guys are an overnight 42-year success. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, in that time, we've been very fortunate. We've got, you know, over 10,000 providers all around the world now running the test. So hope that gives you a bit of an insight into how we kind of stumbled through the dark over the last 14 years and kind of got to here.
Yeah. So I think when I did my test, I think there was some erroneous data that came back. I just want to say that, because it came up with the coffee allergy.
So at least you didn't get wine and beer, and then you're really going to be upset with me. But there you go.
Moderate coffee allergy, and I'm like, I don't know. So I've been drinking a lot of tea lately. So just hasn't made I don't know that it's made a big difference, but because I had so very few allergies. One of them are shellfish, which I've got documented anaphylactic type reaction allergies, and then the dang coffee sitting in the middle there was just that was a tough one to take. But
yeah,
trying to make some adjustments and get that way though. So
that's good. And keep going, Steve. Keep going.
Talk a little bit about, you know, how we correlate a food sensitivity to inflammation. What's going on there?
That's a great question. So the neat thing with this test that Dr. Brent, and I'll keep referring to him because, again, he was, you know, he's the backbone of the technology here, was that a lot of these tests on the market. And so if you go online and Google food sensitivity tests, typically they're all what it's described as IgG only. And so it's measuring the part of your immune system which is measuring exposure. So it's, if you just do an IgG only test, it's a really great way of telling you what you've been consuming. Now, most of us know what we've been consuming, so that's probably a bit of a waste of money. So what we did, or what Brent did, was come up with a way of looking at the other part of your immune system, which is called the innate immune system. And so that part of the immune system is a way of really identifying, of the foods you consume, which ones are actually going on to lead to an inflammatory response, which is that inflammation. So in essence, what we do is a double screen. So we do the same as all those other companies that you can get for, you know, next to nothing on the internet. But rather than stopping there, where you end up with 20 plus foods, and then it's really difficult to be compliant, as we were talking about earlier, we then go on and do this secondary screen of the innate immune system, which then zeroes in on the key foods which are causing inflammation, which, as you mentioned, Steve, is not very many. So with even you, you know, healthy individual that you are, you probably had 5 to 10 foods. And that's generally what we see for most patients. So it's then not overwhelming when it comes to a compliance standpoint, unless obviously we come up with coffee, then it is overwhelming. But generally, for most patients, it's one of those things where we can look at it and say, if it's 5 to 10, okay, I can get my head around this. This makes some sense. And I'm not going to mention names, but I did, just to prove this point, I ran an IgG-only test. And again, there's nothing wrong with those companies. They're excellent companies. The limitation is the pathway, because it's only telling you what you're exposed to. So I ran one of those tests on myself. And on the same day, I ran one of our FIT tests, so the food inflammation test. And what I came back with on the IgG test was I had 25 plus foods to eliminate. And on my FIT test, we had 5. So again, when we talk about eliminating false positives, which sounds like kind of scientific jargon, what we're really meaning is we're eliminating the ones that we don't have to worry about. What we're focusing in on are the ones that actually are causing inflammation and that are the ones that we need to eliminate. Because again, inflammation, as I talked about before, is the root cause of all ill. So you need to make sure that, the great thing with this test is we can help you as an individual reduce your inflammatory response. And by reducing that inflammatory response, it will help reduce any of the symptoms that you present with. And so that's the great thing, to a greater or lesser extent. So again, we're not saying we're cure all here, but what we are saying is if you can reduce that inflammatory burden in your body, then your body has got a chance to do what it should be doing. And it's that's not fighting the inflammation that, again, in many regards, unbeknownst to us, we're bringing in. So, for example, I come back to my good old friend, the food pyramid. Again, in many regards, a lot of providers haven't moved on from the pyramids because they're still thinking of one size fits all. And that's not the case with your diet. If you think about your body as an engine, even if you buy, go out and buy a new car, it'll tell you which oil you need for that engine, which will make it run the best. And this is no different. What we're doing is we're screening your oil, as it were, i.e. the food that you're putting into your body, to work out which of those foods is actually an irritant and not helping your engine, i.e. your body, run as effectively and smooth as you can. And so that's the great thing with this test. You can take the advice and obviously take it on board like Steve did, and he's eliminated coffee and brought on tea. For some of you who recognize my accent, as you can tell, we're coming back this time. We're not letting them dump all the tea in the harbor. We're going to make sure Steve drinks it all. So the idea is we want to make sure that we can look at, you know, how we can make sure everyone's healthier, but on an individualized basis. And I think that's the great thing. And the cool thing when you think about someone like Steve in the pharmacy, they've got then the supplementation that sits alongside what's going on. And I think that's the great thing here. It's much better go belt and braces on this. Let's identify the foods, And then let's look at other ways to help reduce inflammation, which is really where that food sensitivity came from.
I really like that analogy of the car and the oil. I think that people can wrap their head around that, making sure that we get the right oil, not an irritating oil within our system. So I mentioned earlier you're combining the food barrier, or the gut barrier test on it. Kind of talk a little bit about that and what's going on there and some of the markers that you're testing for.
Yeah, and how we came about there was again probably as any small company, you end up wearing lots of hats. And so one of the first hats I had to wear was head of sales, which is a grandiose title for me, jumping in the car and trying to find a doctor to order the test. So but the reality is I go up to New Hampshire typically, where there was a good group of naturopaths, nutritionists, and in between the tattoo stores and the kind of karate dojos, there was the odd provider. So we'd go in and talk to them, and they go, "Look, James, we love this test, love the multiple pathways, we love the fact it's patented, we love all these things about this test, but some of our patients have leaky gut, so we just don't run this test." So it kind of sat in my mind a bit. It's like, if they've got leaky gut, why aren't they testing for it? Why are they guessing for it? And in their defense at that point in time, it wasn't a good test to kind of work out whether the patients had leaky gut or not. So what we were seeing with those providers is they were kind of guessing, not testing. But like I said, there wasn't some good markers there. So what we came up with was we developed a test for leaky gut. So that way we could put them side by side, because it's really a classical, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Was it leaky gut or was it food sensitivities? And because everyone was guessing this, it was kind of getting to be a little irritating for patients because it was taking longer to heal them. Maybe we were kind of missing the key element. So by combining these two, it's proved a really, really effective way of helping patients get treated. Because again, if it's inflammation, we can deal with that through the diet, the elimination of those foods. If you've got leaky gut, then you need to heal that. And then again, the beautiful thing about working with Steve in the pharmacy is they've got supplementation that can help heal that gut. And that's generally 3 to 6 months, you go on some kind of supplementation, a really good gut healing protocol, and then that gives you a way of doing it. And we even have that on the bottom of the report that says, if any of the 8 markers for the gut barrier panel are elevated, then see your provider about going on a good gut healing protocol. So we found that to be incredibly helpful because A, it helps lead the patient in the right direction. And again, we are unashamedly direct to provider because we want those providers with all their knowledge, like Steve, to be able to impart that to you, the patient. Because again, I think it's really helpful to see your health in the round. And so with the food sensitivity, we're looking at inflammation via your diet. With the gut barrier panel now, we're looking at your immune health. So we're looking at, how do we keep your immune system going? And thinking about it, Socrates said, all disease starts in the gut. So again, from that perspective, it's important to look at the gut health to see what's going on. Because if we can heal that, then that's going to have a major benefit in terms of to your overall health as well. And what we had is 4 markers on that panel. One of the things called Candida, which you need to view as kind of like a kind of canary in the coal mine, is the saying that I always use. It's an early indication there may be things going on from a dysbiosis standpoint in terms of kind of gut health. And then we had 2 markers, one looking at zonulin and another thing called occludin. Neither of those are characters in Star Trek. They're both linked to gut health. And so what they look at is the tight junctions in your stomach. And so what they're doing is working out, one of them functionally, are those tight junctions working effectively? And secondly, structurally, are they still standing together? And that's really important. And what we found as well, which again isn't a huge surprise, is those tight junctions aren't only in the gut, they're also in the brain as well. And so we've got an increasing number of providers running the test, looking at not only gut health, but also brain health as well. So that connection between healthy gut, healthy brain, and now we've just had a talk recently looking at brain health and gut health as well. So all those things are really mission critical in terms of what's going on. So we found that that's been a really effective way of helping patients understand that. And then the fourth marker that we added was a thing called LPS, which is lipopolysaccharides, which if some of you haven't had the chance to listen to him, there's a guy called Dr. Rob Silverman, who's a chiropractor who does a great talk on this whole area. He calls this El Diablo. So basically, if you've got LPS going on, then you definitely need to talk to Steve, because again, that's linked to the gram-negative bacteria in your gut, and he can help come up with supplementation to help heal that and calm things down. And so those were the four markers. And then we looked at it from two different elements. So we looked at a thing called IgA, which basically means it's a secretory marker found localized in your gut, and generally is indicative that it's still early stage, nothing to worry about as much, but definitely going to go on some level of supplementation. And then the second pathway looked at was the IgG 1 through 4 and the complement that we look for the foods as well. And if it's got to that point, it's generally been going on for a longer time period and it's more systemic. So again, we wanted to cover off, was it near term, early stage, localized in the gut, or did it become systemic by the way of symptoms and other things going on? So that was kind of the breakdown we had in terms of with the gut barrier panel. And we're finding it really effective in terms of, you know, Christy, who's another one of my, you know, favorite speakers. We were dealing with our distributor in Japan as we launched this. And he said, James, I need a bad patient. And I'm assuming what he was talking about was rather than, you know, hadn't been compliant, was had a lot of red on this panel. So, you know, lots of things elevated. And so I just happened to be in the lab that day. So I was kind of flicking through, and Christy had a patient who was elevated all the red for the candida, the zonulin, and the occludin. It was incredible. I hadn't seen so much red on one report. So I called her up and I said, Christy, I'm assuming this patient's not in great shape. And she said, it's really interesting, James. Had a lot of mold toxicity and exposure, and as well as one of the worst cases of clinical depression I've seen in 25 years. So it was really interesting that this gut barrier panel picked up that whole toxicity thing linked in with the gut, but more importantly, as well as we talked about the kind of brain gut connection, the depression as well. So it's really interesting to see in practice how well this is working.
Wow. So to make it as simple as possible, so you're testing for things that should be in the gut and not in the blood. If Correct. They're in the blood, that means you basically, if that lights up on that section, that means you've got tears in a lining of your gut. You got things leaking through, right?
Exactly. So that's what leaky gut is. It's very straightforward. It's like those tight junctions, which are basically kind of holding it all together. There's issues in terms of the function and structure of those. So that's the importance of this. And as we said, back to, you know, we don't really learn anything. The fact that they've been saying this for thousands of years, all disease starts in the gut. Again, what we're trying to do is say, let's try and heal that gut. If you seal that nicely, then all these other things will start taking care of themselves as well.
Yeah. So that's going to lead into the question. I think you kind of answered a little bit, but who is a candidate to do the FIT test and the gut integrity test? I mean, I just judging by what I'm listening to, I would guess anybody with a heartbeat would be a candidate, but... if we had to narrow that down a little bit, what would be a good candidate?
Yeah, so I mean, I always say to providers, if you've got any inflamed patients and they go 95%, I'm like, well, what happened to that 5%? But no, it's generally lots of patients who've got underlying inflammatory responses. Obviously, gut related issues is a big one. So again, anything related to the gut is big. But think of those other barriers. So think about skin related. So we've had amazing reactions and success stories around acne and psoriasis and things like that. This has been really effective for those. And then things like, you know, we talked about brain health. Think about things like migraines. Those kind of things, again, are really your body's way of playing out an inflammatory response. And so fatigue is another big one as well. So, you know, all of these things which are, you know, an inflammatory reaction, we've seen really good outcomes from. And so that's been really helpful in terms of how we've done this. So as we have developed, it's been a range. And as I said, even recently, I had a call with a gentleman called Dr. Sheldon Jordan, who's a renowned neurologist, and he's been using the test for the last 5 years on all his patient population. So it's really interesting. It's going from, you know, things like acne now up to neurologists running it in terms of gut barrier, so psoriasis. And again, all these things, again, autism, we've had a lady called Dr. Cindy Schneider, who again, she's been running the panel in her autism center down in Arizona for 14 years now. So again, anytime there's an inflammatory response, why not look at the diet? Because again, back to the oil analogy, let's make sure that we've got the right oil going into that engine. And we don't know what the right oil is unless we test for it. And so that's the key with the test that we're doing.
That's awesome. I like it. I like the direction of being able to help patients a little bit differently with a little bit different tool. So,
But I think the nice thing for the patients we talk about, it's something they understand. I mean, we're not trying to, tie them up in science. We're just saying, look, let's look at which foods as an individual may well be, causing some of that inflammation. And again, it's not a judgment on them. How would they know? So that's the reason we kind of recommend that they do the test.
Totally. You got it. So, as I'm poking around your website a little bit, kind of trying to figure out a little bit about KBMO, which I totally love got your kids all involved with it. That was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
I don't know who had to lobby to get theirs first. Is it strictly on age or is it?
It's clearly an importance. My wife is first. So there we go.
Your wife is first.
That wasn't debatable. So K for Catherine. So again, she's number one. You'd be brave man to put your wife anything other than number one.
All right. Yeah, that good advice. Good advice.
I didn't need to do a test to work that one out.
Right. Yeah, if you wanna maintain a long marriage, put your wife first.
Exactly.
On your website you have a cardiovascular inflammation test or CIT test. We do a fair amount of that type of testing. Tell me about that. And I'm curious because that's a nice test that you have there.
Yeah. And again, it's all back to, we talked about the brain gut links, all these things are interrelated. And so if you think about it, we're looking at food inflammation, we're looking at immune health. And it felt like for most patients, the kind of missing link there was probably cardiovascular, which again, it's immune health in many regards. So it's like, it's all linked to inflammation. And so it all began to kind of come home to me when we did a big IBS clinical study looking at irritable bowel syndrome. And the two markers that we measured alongside a thing called the IBS severity score, which in essence is just measuring the patient's symptoms. And we measured them over a 12-month period to see, did they decline or not based on us eliminating the foods from their diet. And so in that intervention group, as they call it, we saw a dramatic reduction in their IBS severity score. But what we also did, as I told you, that the test is called the food inflammation test. So the idea was, could we also measure some general inflammatory markers at the same time? So we measured a thing called high sensitive CRP, which is a well-known inflammatory marker, as well as homocysteine levels, which is another well-known, not only cardiovascular marker, but also linked to Alzheimer's as well. So again, if that's too elevated, then there's links in now in the literature to how that links. So all these things, what a shock, are all interrelated. You can't look after your cardiovascular, ignore your gut, and be eating an inflamed diet. So the idea was, if we could run these three tests, and the cool thing is they're all fingerstick. So again, the idea was, let's break away from, having to give full employment to every phlebotomist in the country. Why don't we look at coming up with a way that means you can run them in the pharmacy, you can take them home, you can run them at home. So again, we're not recommending testing at home, but we are recommending collection at home. And that gives you a way of doing the test. And then all they need to be done is popped into your mailbox. And then they come back to our lab here in Boston and we run the test. But again, the idea is that ease of use again, how do we make it as simple as possible for people? And so we looked at that cardiovascular world and it was kind of slightly alarming to me that when you look at the standard lipid profile, which all the cardiologists run, and I'm sure you know this fact, Steve, but 50% of patients who have a heart attack, day of their heart attack or their coronary event, their lipid panel is normal. So if that's the standard of care, I fancied my chances of beating that. So we thought, well, let's look at that as, you know, that's the bar. Even I think I could stumble over that, let alone jump over it. So the idea was, if that's where, you know, the insurance companies or whoever has decided that that's what we should be paying for, we thought, look, we've got to do better than that. So we looked at adding and working with a number of really good cardiovascular providers and functional ones and said, look, how do we come up with a panel that, that really is a better fit for really patients? And all of these disease states, it's amazing to me, you know, whether it's diabetes, cardiovascular health, all these things are linked into diabetes, yeah, throat, dementia, heart attack. Generally, and this was amazing to me, they all take about 30 years. So it takes about 30 years in many cases to get to those points. The key is, if you can do some early detection linked in with some of these cardiovascular markers, what a concept. You might help prevent them. And so that was the idea. How do we kind of break this cycle of the only time I got tested was when I was, you know, on the floor in the ER because I'd had my massive coronary artery, you know, attack. So the idea is here, can we help look at prevention versus only testing to kind of know that, yep, he's, you know, he's out on the on his back in the ER, probably something wrong with him. Let's test him now. So the idea was, how do we kind of enhance that by coming up with some markers that would be really effective looking at that? So we came up with 10 key markers. And so we did the standard lipid panel, which is things like total cholesterol, triglycerides, HDL and LDL. But both HDL and LDL were measured. So what we thought is, let's actually directly measure it to give the patient a better way of having a better outcome when it comes to that whole approach. So that's what we did. So we kind of had a measured approach to that as well. The other thing that we did was, again, we looked at the literature and you know, what else would be useful. So we looked at glucose, which is another good marker, HbA1c, and then we added homocysteine and high-sensitive CRP, which are the ones that we talked about with the IBS study. And then the other two that we've added were, for me, really obvious and very disappointing that they're not being measured by everyone. So we looked at a thing called ApoB, which, if you look globally, that is the measure of cholesterol, not total cholesterol, but ApoB, because it's the suitcase that packages all the cholesterol together and carries it around your body. So you really, really need to measure ApoB, and that's not included in the lipid profile. The more alarming thing is that, given that worldwide, globally, is the marker that every cardiologist is told is the one they should measure, less than 5% of the US population has been measured for it. So again, what we need to do is improve that, and that's why we put it on this panel. Let's have ApoB, globally renowned marker for cholesterol, let's use that. And so that's what we added that. The other one is a thing called LP little a. And again, in my bio read, in one of my previous lives, I did some work with molecular diagnostics. And I always found it slightly disingenuous that a lot of the markers are, the data shows that 2% of the US population may have this marker. It's not really high odds, is it? I mean, you're better off going and playing lottery rather than spending money on a genetic test in some regards. So what I thought is, with LP little a, it's a genetic marker, but it's 1 in 3. So 30% of the population has that. So again, if Steve or James doesn't, one of our listeners, one of your listeners does. So the idea is coming up with markers that give us a way of really identifying these in a more aggressive way. So LP little a is 1 in 3 of us have it. Again, not probably a shocker, but maybe a shocker. Even the dog's complaining about this one. 1% of the US population has been measured for that. So again, what we wanted to do is go, oh my gosh, what are we doing, people? Let's identify some of these things that have got great, great kind of data and stuff behind them and make sure those are the things we're measuring. And so that's what we put for the for this whole cardiovascular panel, was coming up with things that would make sense in terms of, if you got measured for these, you could be treated differently. And LP little a, just to kind of finish that, it's a genetic marker for basically plaque. So basically it'll tell you how aggressively your plaque is going to develop, which is obviously mission critical for any cardiovascular test. So again, and then the nice thing is, there are supplements that you can take for LP little a which can bring it down. So again, there's some actionable things here, which is why it blows my mind that we've only had 1% of us have had the chance to kind of get tested for it. So February was cardiovascular month. And so again, we tested everyone at KBMO for their cardiovascular panel. We did find that it was remarkable how many people you get into a broom cupboard as they ran away from people who were asking to get tested. But generally, we found them all and then we brought them all back in and they all got tested. But again, it's a great thing to know if you've got some of those markers, because it's really helpful in terms of knowing what your cardiovascular health can be at a much earlier stage versus waiting for it to be well past the point of no return.
You know, your company sounds a little bit about like ours, because at Christmas I got my employees vitamin D and omega-3 fatty acid test to get them out. So, so I have been practicing 36 years. So get that number out there.
Exactly.
And we've been testing the same cholesterol values for 36 years. So it's like, I mean, do you think about technology and healthcare and everything else? I mean, where have we gone? Why are we not testing for this stuff?
Yeah.
So critical tests that, once again, you said are actionable and, you know, things that we can do to help keep our patients healthier for longer periods of time. So the last thing we want to do is have a normal cholesterol level and end up in emergency room on a Monday morning, right?
Yeah. And it's been interesting. As I talk to a lot of the providers, they're going, wow, that makes sense now, James, because we were testing these guys for their food and their inflammation and their gut health, and then one of them had a heart attack. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. So, you know, but it's because unless you test for these things, it's not going to be obvious in every patient's case. Now, clearly there's some links between cardiovascular disease and obesity and things like that. But, you know, you can be a healthy, or as much as you think is healthy, individual, and it could be stress. It could be other related issues which are leading to these. So it's not always blindingly obvious that, you know, these things make sense. So again, that's the importance, I think, and why I was so keen to add this cardiovascular element to it, to make sure that we can give you a better ability to treat yourself and the patients that I know a lot of providers who listen to your show can relate to as well.
Yeah, good stuff. So where do you see KBMO? What's on the horizon for KBMO testing-wise and what?
Yeah, well, it's really interesting. I mean, we've obviously expanded into these three areas. I was having a call with one of our neurologists recently talking about, can we, again, back to that zonulin, we've got a unique zonulin test that we developed, complete with some of my employees were reminding me yesterday, we have two goats, Zelda, and I can't remember the second one's name now, but that we used to kind of help develop it. So again, some companies have racehorses, we've got goats. I don't know what that tells you about us, but anyway, that's how it goes. I think we're looking at developing more markers linked with that whole gut health and brain health, so that there'll be more things on that gut barrier panel to see, yes, if zonulin's elevated, does that link to brain health or is it just gut health? And so I think there's some fascinating people that we're beginning to corral around some of those things. The one I'm really excited about my dog's been making so much noise during this program, but is we're looking at a veterinary test as well. So we've done about 50 dogs recently, and we're just kind of going through that, the results on that at the moment. So again, that's another interesting area where, as Steve was mentioning, he's got three daughters who've all fled the nest. I'm sure his fourth daughter or fourth child is his dog, and we'll all spend an inordinate amount of money on our pets because they're the fourth child. So that's one of those areas that, not because everyone spends a lot of money on it, but it's one that's not been properly diagnosed either. And one of the other fascinating things I found out, and I feel even worse for my dog now that he's got me as his owner, is that in the UK alone, there was 2 million pet owners, or pet parents as they're called, were cooking for their dogs. So my poor guy was getting kibble and a bit of wet food, and apparently I wasn't rolling out the old apron for him and cooking for him on a nightly basis. But
wow,
there's a huge amount of people out there cooking for their dogs, because we've been thinking about this veterinary area for a while. we're thinking, do we look at specific kibbles and things like that? So now what we've decided to do is let's put the Fit 176 out there, or a variation on that, for the veterinary market. So we're hoping to get that out there at some point this year as well. So that's one of the big areas. We've also in late development of a rapid test as well, which looks at eggs, milk, and wheat. And so that would be one that would, again, lead itself really well for the pharmacy as well. So
that'd be great. That'd be an incredible test. So
So we've got a lot of things. It's a lot of fun being, you know, having the opportunity to kind of invest in these areas. Because again, it's all fulfilling what we love to do. We love to serve our providers and their patients with more and more good information that's highly actionable. And that's really what we're loving to do. And again, with that backbone of inflammation, I mean, it's amazing how often that is the root cause. And so if we can help give that information out and then work with great pharmacists and great other providers talking about that, who have the cure in many regards in terms of that supplementation and products that they have, it's a great fit. And so again, we're really excited to keep it, you know, expanding the horizons around more tests, more things, but based around some of these core values of, you know, making sure when you call KBO, you'll get a human being, you won't get bounced around a phone system. And so old fashioned stuff like that, which I think is really important. So that's what we're doing as we continue, is making sure, you know, we offer young graduates jobs. And so, you know, rather than saying, oh, we can give that to AI, James bought a laminator. So that tells you how much he thinks of AI. So anyway, we're trying to keep, I think, what we consider important front of mind, and kind of keep making more opportunities for our providers to make them successful. And that success is bred in making more of their patients have good success stories.
Well, you know, you definitely can feel your passion for helping patients and helping providers help their patients. So your business sounds, once again, a lot like our business. You know, we are answering the phone. Yep. We don't have anybody, you know, directing you to a fancy menu to, you know, wait 15 minutes to get to talk to somebody. So
exactly,
we want to have a human on the other end of the line. So, well, James, this has been a very lively conversation. I appreciate your knowledge and your time. And I'm looking forward to working with you and your company in the future. So
likewise, and hopefully we'll see you at Great Lakes at the next one this year.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Good. Good.
So if you've made it this far in the podcast, your reward.
Yeah, congratulations.
Right. Congratulations. You made it this far. If you call the pharmacy or stop in, you can get 25% off the supplement of your choice using the code KBMO Diagnostic Podcast for those telephone and in-person orders. So as we wrap this up, once again, thank you, James. And as always, be vigilant about your health.
Thank you, Steve, and thanks everyone for listening.
As always, be vigilant about your health.